The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for being with us. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes, live in studio on a crisp, interestingly enough, Jim, it's a crisp Thursday afternoon in April. I'd noticed that when I came up from Malibu Grill to have lunch. Good thing I didn't try to walk up here. Yeah. It's end of April, and here we are with 30s in the morning, 60s in the afternoon, but the 60s are a little bit crisp.
It's springtime, so this is still allowable. We don't want to rush to June 21st and the first day of summer and 948 degrees, excuse me, or whatever the temperatures happen to be. So I think this is, though, like the final stretch of the cool weather and everything.
Well, you're wearing a vest today, and I'm not. And
I'm perhaps always
that's
cold,
the why.
Though.
Well,
I am always cold.
You are
cold.
A cool person. That's true. You knew that was coming with me.
Where's that drum cymbal sound?
I told someone yesterday, really, I'm a cut-up because I was having some trouble shaving. But, you know, there's two reasons. Okay, go ahead.
Do you ever want to know Doug Hughes in a very personal way? Get into a pun war with Doug. And these things can stretch out across years. They can go across email, Facebook, text message, all kinds of things. But if you really want to earn the respect and appreciation of Doug Hughes, put in an A-plus effort into a pun war, because it will just come back and forth.
Can I give an example?
Yes,
this
please.
Is our show today.
It
I can
is.
Give an example.
David's at a due diligence conference. That's why he's not here. Right. We've explained it. So now we got our 55 minutes left.
So I got the other day a Facebook memory of the two pieces of bacon with a strap on them.
I know where you're going.
That said, this is a little chewy. Right, this bacon is a little chewy. Looked like Chewbacca.
Right,
and this was like 9 or 10 years ago. And you know what you responded back to me?
No,
I had took the picture. A piece of ham.
And it ham said ham solo.
Yes, it was terrific. There we were, breakfast meeting over Star Wars, or Star Wars with breakfast food. It was terrific.
I promise you, folks, we are professional individuals. We are grown adults and everything, but sometimes these things... Well, you know, talking about memories, I was home earlier, and I don't get on Twitter, or X as it's now called, by the kids today, but I don't get on there too often, but I was scrolling through, and... around this time in 1999, so 25 years ago, was the premiere of the new Star Wars trilogy, the prequels, if you will.
Yes.
And to reiterate how old I am, so I have two very good friends that I grew up with, and in 1999, you did not have smartphones. You did not have the option to do online tickets and all those kinds of things. So we camped out with hundreds of our closest friends out at the movie theater on the east side of town that is now closed. Mm. And so this clip was a news report of fans in line waiting to get their tickets and everything. And I can remember vividly the hundreds and hundreds of people. So it was at the, was it Carisotes or AMC, whatever the theater is out on the east side of town. It stretched down and behind Hobby Lobby, went down to the Kroger area.
Wow.
There were that many people because that was how you got tickets for the Star Wars premiere
in
1999. Was it worth it? In hindsight, wasn't the greatest movie if you're a true Star Wars fan. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't the best. But there are many memories of that night sleeping on the cold Bloomington ground. And a week later... being able to go in and see the premiere of the next generation of Star Wars.
That's terrific. Well, listen, so, if we want to do a Star Wars show today, we certainly could.
We need to wait actually one more week because next weekend, next Saturday is May the 4th, which is Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you.
Absolutely.
So we may have to hijack David's show again next week and just do a Star Wars show.
Actually, there's a person I know. She is in a book club that I'm in, and we're supposed to meet on May the 5th for our book club after church on Sunday. Yeah. And so I'm in this text loop, and we're trying to get the date together, and she says, I can't be at book club because I am going as Rey to a Star Wars wedding on May the 4th. I text back, this is the greatest sentence I've read all week. Yes. I could not believe that. That's absolutely outstanding. We better get to some financial stuff. You now, got anything in the news of the week?
My last thing that I wish that we had done is if we had known this was going to happen and the discussion would start off this way, that we could have planned our show topics and tied them into Star Wars themes.
Yeah, we,
you know, if we had planned ahead, but
let's look forward to 2025.
There
you
go.
Let's make
spontaneity is everybody's friend. So from USA Today, the economy slowed more than expected earlier this year as weaker business stockpiling and exports offset solid consumer spending and a flurry of housing construction. The nation's gross domestic product, the GDP, we talk about it every week here on the show. It's the value of all goods and services that are produced here in the United States. The nation's GDP expanded at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.6% in the first 3 months of the year. That's according to the Commerce Department on Thursday. That's down from robust growth of 4.1% in the second half of last year and below the healthy 2.5% gain that was projected by economists in a Bloomberg survey. Since late 2022, the economy repeatedly has defied forecast of a sharp pullback or recession, shrugging off the Fed's aggressive interest rate hikes and the inflation spike those high rates were intended to tame. The disappointing showing last quarter could soften the views of Fed officials who say they're in no rush to cut rates following an acceleration in consumer prices the first 3 months of 2024. And we all know how housing is in this community. It is tough to say the least. Well, from Bloomberg, pending sales of existing U.S. homes in March reached their highest levels in a year in spite of a persistently high borrowing cost and low supply situation. An index of contract signings from the National Association of Realtors climbed 3.4% to 78.2 last month. That's the highest since February of 2023. The median estimate of economists surveyed by Bloomberg called for 0.4% growth. So we went 3.4, what was expected to be 0.4. The gains were led by monthly gains at or near 7% in the South and the West, and to a lesser extent to the Northeast. Those of us here in the Midwest, we were the only region where pending sales fell. Sales of previously owned homes have lagged new home sales recently as the nation's home builders bought down customers' interest rates or offered other sweeteners to complete deals. The supply in the home resale market, meantime, is well below pre-pandemic levels. The National Association of Realtors sees median home pricing rising 1.8% both this year and next year, climbing to a record $396,000+ this year and $403,000+ in 2025. Prices of new homes may dip slightly this year, the NAR predicts, because developers are building smaller, thus less costly homes, but they're seen snapping back next year.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Wow. There's a lot to go through and digest there just in the housing part department alone. But when we think about the economy and GDP and the numbers that came out today that do seem to point to, we're not predicting this or accentuating this, but they do seem to begin to point to a bit of a slowdown. We're going to talk about some of that today, Jim, because this is April. And you know what April is? It's on the tip of your tongue. It is Financial Literacy Month.
Yes, it is.
In the United States of America. And I know that all of our listeners were well aware of that. It was on their calendars, April 1 through April 30th, that it is going to be Financial Literacy Month. Everyone's been excited about it. Actually, no, they haven't. No one said a word about it. You and I got together for the radio show. Yes, okay. When we come back, we're going to jump right into what financial literacy means, what it is in America today to be exposed to financial literacy at a young age. And we're going to talk about some details. So there's going to be a lot of back and forth. It's going to be light, but it's going to be a good program. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes, brought to you by Kenny Bland Auctions, your full-service auction service offering pre-planning the sale of your estate or real estate. You can visit them online at kennyblandauctions.com. Wonderful people who run that particular business. We know Dirk and Nikki, just great people. So if you need to do some planning, some estate planning, or thinking about stuff, you know, stuff in your home and things that you need to sell, they would be great people to talk to as you're getting rid of that. Jim, Financial Literacy Month. You know that literacy doesn't just mean that you can read and write. Literacy, from its root word, means that you read and write and use numbers in continuum throughout all of your life. And so when we talk about financial literacy and what it means, it simply means that people should be able to understand and work with their finances and have some plans and some ideas and be financially successful. Now, unfortunately, in America, when we begin to look at the numbers and we begin to recognize the averages, which we all know that average is dangerous because average pulls the greatest and the least together and you come up with something in the middle, we know that when we look at the averages, things aren't always looking really good for people in America when it comes to emergency savings, to budgets, to debt, to retirement planning, all of these things. And it's not necessarily someone's fault that they got to this place. Part of it is they haven't had financial literacy from when they were very young. And so they didn't learn these things. And then sometimes life can throw some real curveballs. You don't have to listen to Dave Ramsey's show, who's on before us, too long to recognize that life can change fast. And sometimes it can change for the up, but oftentimes it changes for more challenging things. I remember I went to private Christian school for high school, and I remember in my freshman and sophomore year that we had consumer economics. And we had a gentleman that came in every year, and he would teach us about compound interest, and the, you know, the earlier you get started and let your money compound and grow, and just the power or the magic of compound interest. I'll never forget, I'll say this on the air, my first stock that I bought, this is how intelligent I was Levi's Strauss. You know why I bought Levi's, Jim?
Because you probably were wearing Levi's.
I was wearing Levi's, and I was told they would never go out of style. Okay?
Yep.
That's fair. Yeah, to a teenage mind, that wasn't so bad. But I remember being taught about these things at a young age. And you know, listen, I'm like Pete the Planner and everyone else. You could look into my finances, and you might find that some days I've made better decisions than others. But that recognition at a young age was a benefit to me. Okay, not everyone that's a teenager or in high school are taught these things about compound interest, about interest that is working against you all the time, about budgeting, about how to balance a checkbook. These things sometimes are missing in high school curriculums. And because of that, we hope that people in their 20s or 30s, somewhere along the way, grab hold of this stuff. But the truth is, Jim, the best job we can do is to get people started at a young age.
Well, you think about it, there's a lot of frustration, challenges, concerns from people when you are 18 years old and it comes to August and you've graduated from high school and you may be going into higher education. And you are now 18 years old, which means if you're a male, you've signed up for your service program, you are eligible to vote, you've done all the things, and you are now an adult to sign over anything and everything on your finances when you go in for student loans.
Yes.
So your mom and dad don't get to walk in with you to registration hall, whatever university it is. Granted, I'm sure, and hopefully in a good situation, they're involved leading up to it, but they're not walking in with you and signing the documents with you to say, I want to take out $10,000 or $150,000 of student loans.
Exactly.
So an 18-year-old suddenly has the responsibility of what a lot of people our age are doing with a home. I mean, taking on a very similar obligation that you're signing up for a monthly plan of some kind once you get out of college, that you're going to be paying this in installments, and here's your interest rate. And if you're 18 years old, you're like, I just watched TikTok a little bit ago. I don't know the ins and outs of this and everything.
Yeah.
So you're exactly right. Starting early, and again, not saying everybody goes to college, nothing wrong with whatever you do, but that is one of the very first things at 18 years old going into adulthood of where, oh my gosh, I have to know what I'm doing.
So at the end of this program, because it is Financial Literacy Month, and because you know that I am a voracious reader, I am going to give a list of books that I think people should read or recommend. But I will say there is a young man who is in my sight who I hope to be able to have some influence, some mentorship with a birthday coming up. And I know exactly what book I'm going to buy.
My birthday's not till December.
Oh, okay. I'm going to buy and I'm going to send to him because I know he would read it and I know he would do well with it. And I just think to myself, you know, just little nudges like that for a young person are just so valuable. Because, Jim, if I were to say to you, now you work at Comprehensive Financial, we've worked together for 21 years coming up in July, believe it or not. I know that dates us, right?
No,
21 years.
Yeah.
But some people don't really know what the basics of financial planning are.
Right.
And the basics of financial planning are this. You have a job, a career, and you're going to begin earning money. And financial planning says this: first, I'm going to plan, I'm going to find a career, I'm going to find a job, I'm going to know what I'm going to make. And from that point, I have to take those dollars and I have to plan with them. Mm-hmm. I have to put together a budget. I have to put together savings. I have to put together insurance. And all this stuff comes really fast, to your point, at young people who haven't had to do all these things. We don't think, but you never know. In some homes they do, in some homes they don't. The reality is everyone, though, everyone needs to be able to plan with the next dollar that they make.
And this is something that you can certainly start off with kids of any age very, very simply. That if you have a child who is 5 years old and they get a dollar per year of their age, so they get a $5 allowance a week, and there is a toy that they want to buy that's $20, you can explain to them, okay, I'm going to give you $5 $1 bills, and you can put two in this bucket that are going to go for that toy, and in 10 weeks, you're going to be able to buy that toy. Or if you want to do all five, but you can't do other things. I mean, the principle can be established very, very young.
Yes, absolutely. So, now, Jim, let me shift gears for one moment. Because we're talking about young people, teenagers, getting ready to graduate high school, and we're focusing on them because there has not been a lot of education for young people in financial literacy, right? But let's talk about people who are in the millennial age, or let's even go to people who are in their 40s and 50s, and what does financial literacy mean for them? Because the truth is, those people are already been working for a while. They're dealing with the next dollar. They're trying to figure out where the next dollar pays for the last bill or the next thing they're saving for. And so when we talk about the basic parts of financial planning, which is earn your money, have a plan with it, know what's going to happen next, this doesn't go away. And that's why the word literacy, which I said in the beginning, is actually a word of continuum. It just continues all of your life. So I don't want our listeners just to think, oh, they're just talking about teenagers and high school kids.
No, not at all.
We work with people all day, every day, that are making decisions that have to do with the continuum or the continual process of financial planning. And when we look at, you know, and there's so many, listen, you can go online and type up debt snowball versus debt avalanche. They both are there. We can talk about budgeting. We can talk about all these different ideas. And when we come back, we're going to dissect into a few of those. Mm-hmm. The main thing is to find the plan that works for you and to find a trusted voice to help move you down the right track. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes, brought to you by Like Law Group. Attorney Lance Like at the Like Law Group would like to give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance Like at the Like Law Group at 812-323-8255. 8300. Another great guy who does great work for the people of this community and his clients, for sure. Jim, when we broke off there, we were talking that financial literacy isn't just hoping that kids in high school get it or kids in college get it, but it's a continuum. It goes on for life. Let me just, because there's so much ground we could cover.
Absolutely.
I want to kind of bring it into a few different stages or phases. So where to start, what to do. There is no lack of budgeting ideas out there. One of them that I have seen work very well over my 25 years of managing money for people is the 50-30-20. 50% is life, 30% is necessities, insurance, and 20% is savings. Now, there are people that would argue with that formula, but I have to say the people who are saving at least 20% of their income, they get to a good spot. The people who have learned to live on 50%, which is nearly impossible in America today, I am no fan, and I'll say that publicly, of who I'm getting ready to talk about, but one senator who has written a book, her name is Elizabeth Warren. I'm not a fan of her policies. She did write a book that I read several years ago called The Two-Income Trap, How America Has Fallen into a Two-Income Trap. And as that happened, it became very hard for people to have the proper savings, insurance, and all those different things. So when we give these formulas, Jim, there's no one that's right or one that's wrong. It's the one that gets you to financial freedom. The main thing I would say is that everyone needs to have a budget, and everyone needs to have a 50-30-20, a 60-20-20, whatever the number is that's right for you where you're at. But debt elimination needs to be a part of that, because the sooner you get out of debt, the quicker you'll be to financial freedom.
And the thing with the savings part is that those savings is not necessarily something that you will never touch until you're 65 or whatever.
Right.
So you have to keep that in mind, that when you're putting this money aside in a savings situation, it is for when you need to purchase a car, if you need to make a down payment on your home. If there's an emergency in life, whatever the case may be, so that, as Doug was just mentioning, that keeping your debts minimized, if not at zero, you have the resources to pay for that situation that comes up, or that you can tap into with the idea that it will bring a greater benefit to your life, so to speak, that you would be able to move into a home, that you pay the deposit on the apartment that you're moving into, whatever it is, that you have those savings, not just for long-term saving, but also short and midterm as well.
Exactly. And you took the words right out of my mouth. If I could go back and start with a bunch of people who are in their 20s and 30s and put together financial plans for them, I would say you need to have a list of three different types of savings: your short-term, midterm, and long-term. Obviously, we spend a lot of time talking about long-term, because it's a big number at the end of the day. If you've saved 10% or 20%, it turns out to be a big number. But what about the short term, which is a car, a down payment for a house? Sometimes I say to people, the best time to start saving for the next set of tires on your car, Jim, is when?
When you have to replace the new or the last set of tires.
Exactly right. Because it's one of, in financial planning, we call it known unknowns. You know you're going to have to replace your tires. You just don't know when. Recently, I talked to someone, was talking with someone who had to replace their tires, and it was that exact thing. And it was, oh, I knew it was coming, and it came, right? It's not a big surprise that we're going to have to replace the tires on our car. So short-term, midterm, kids are going to college, something along those lines, or I'm going to go on a special trip for this particular special event in my life. And you put your money towards that. So it's a midterm. So short-term, midterm, long-term. So again, I want to say one thing that I have learned over the years, and the history and the evidence is there. Budgets work, and they don't just work for people in their 20s and 30s. They work for people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Ivan Qilashing, one of the wealthiest men in all of Asia, attributes his great wealth and business success to being excellent at cash flow management. And I say that because it literally works in every decade of your life. And it's not something you can just push aside. It's something that you need to embrace. So you have a career. You have a budget. There's a lot of different ways to approach a budget, get on the right budget. It's very valuable, and it's something you need to be doing for the rest of your life. Nations fail, Jim, because of lack of budgets. Mm-hmm. Families have financial ruin because of lack of budgets. Corporations default because of lack of budgets, right? And so when we think about the risk of not having a budget, it's far, far greater risk to not have a budget than to spend the time putting one together.
The other thing is that, you know, it's no secret that there's a lot of challenges in this world for individuals financially. I mean, you name it, there's an issue. The price of the grocery store, the restaurant, the apartment, the house, all these things. I mean, it's tough. I say all of this that if you can start with a financial plan of doing, as Doug was saying, the 50-30-20 or the 60-20-20, whatever it is, if you can start putting that money aside, that 20% or whatever the case may be, in time, hopefully sooner than later, you actually adapt to that. That it is not something, it's if you set it and forget it, like you don't even realize that it's out there. It's just on its own kind of thing. So as your hopefully career improves and time goes on and you may get pay raises and things like that, you keep that same mentality. You in turn have the opportunity to grow financially more as well.
And Jim, let me say this. Recently, I had a conversation with a couple in their 50s, peak mm-hmm. income earning years. The 40s are typically around the most expensive in your mid-50s, most expensive part of your life because the kids are at home and all this. But when you get in your mid-50s, that's when you have to go back at the budget again and say, okay, mm-hmm. I don't have kids at home. Maybe I'm putting them through school. However, I'm at my peak income earning years. What can I adjust in my budget now to make sure the last 10 to 15 years of savings are meaningful and substantial and make a significant difference? And there are a lot of people in America today who are doing that. I want to tell you, this is something that's been very near and dear to my heart this week mm-hmm. because I saw a great decision. Someone that I know got a raise mm-hmm. and they were telling me about this. What great news, right? I got a raise and this person is certainly, you know, worked hard and deserve it's a raise. You're glad to get it, a 3% raise. The question is, what do you do with a raise?
Mm.
Well, Jim, you worked at Comprehensive Financial for a long time.
Yes.
What do we do when we get a raise? We put the money right into our retirement account and pretend like we didn't get it. So a 3% raise, 3% into the retirement account to let that money begin to build. This is why we have in America now auto escalation on retirement accounts. As you get a raise, you just automatically increase your savings into that. Now, this person is doing that, and it's going to work out splendidly mm-hmm. because they had put a budget together for the monies before, so the new monies coming in are going to be able to be applied to their account for their retirement savings.
So I'm sitting over here grinning, and I know you're seeing me like thinking through in my head. At what point then do you adjust your budget after a year, 2 years, 5 years, or whatever, because the price of steak and eggs is much higher at the grocery store now and that raise and whatnot? Like, you need to start accessing it because cost of living has gone up and whatnot. That's where I come back at that, so to speak.
Yes. Well, so it's easy to do.
Okay.
It's easy to let that raise go by and be consumed, right? But this is a cost of living raise. Typically around 3% is what mm-hmm. cost of living raises are. And as inflation has been up over the last year, year and a half, and everyone is feeling the pinch of that, what most people have been doing is begin tightening their belt, thinking of different ways. You know, there's a personal inflation rate, which is what you consume, versus the government's inflation rate, yep. which is the stated rate. And what I would say is that while it may be painful and tempting to take that this person's 3%, but whatever the raise may be, and say, okay, let's spend that, right? Because everything has gone up. What I would say, as I said to this person, is get the match. If the match is dollar for dollar, 3%, get the 3%. If the match is, you know, or if the raise is 5 or 10%, but the match is dollar for dollar, 4%, at least get the match dollar for dollar. After that, then go ahead and use that money to pay down debts or something along those lines to improve your financial situation. So when you have a raise, increase your contributions to your retirement accounts. At least, at the very least, minimum to the dollar for dollar match or whatever that is. And that person, it's going to work out well for them. Very excited for them. We need to take a break, Jim.
Yep.
When we come back, we're going to talk about some more things that have to do with financial literacy. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
Welcome back, everybody, to Your Money with David Hayes. Jim Inman and Doug Hughes in the studio. David is at a due diligence conference, which means basically you go and learn about a company and kind of get updated on their rules and guidelines and those kinds of things.
Yeah. And different government regulations. And there's, you know, a lot of education involved.
Yeah.
And it's a good. I'm going to one next week, actually, in New York City. So, yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Do you need anybody to go with you?
I think I got that covered.
It's all good. May 4th in New York City, the Empire State Building may be lit up like a lightsaber, but whatever. So enough about that. If you missed the first part of the show, you got to hear it again Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, WGCL or WGCLradio.com.
Absolutely.
Financial Literacy Month is the month of April, and we're talking about all kinds of things. And so,
you know, Jim, let me say this, and we're going to, in the next segment, get to books
because,
you know, I'm a voracious reader.
Yes,
I've got some great ones. So let me just go back to financial literacy, because there's so much that could be said. I just want to emphasize what's at the beginning. Financial literacy, the word literacy means to be able to read, write, and to work through numbers throughout your life. So it's a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
Financial literacy, what we're telling to everyone here on the program that's listening, is that financial planning, no matter which stage you're at, no matter what phase, whether you're examining insurance, life insurance, whether you need to know that there's an annuity, a mutual fund, an ETF, whatever the topic is, it is a process of lifelong learning. You don't just set it and forget it in a country like America. Now, there may be nations in the world in which you don't have to think too much about these things. Perhaps the government does most of it for you or something like that. But in America, if you're going to be financially successful, you truly do have to have financial literacy. And that's why we teach the classes that we teach. David does one on taxes and retirement. I do retirement planning today. We have programs in our conference room next door where we talk about dealing with dementia. You brought up some really interesting accounts this week that you've learned about. And so financial planning, I want everyone to know this, it truly is a lifelong path. Now, what are some things that we think that you should be working on? What is your financial background? And I'm going to talk about this in the book. What is your psychology of money? What makes you afraid about money? What makes you excited or satisfied about money? What does financial freedom mean? And if you begin to define things like that and work backwards into it versus just looking at statements and saying, oh, I'm up, I'm down, you will begin to have that literacy that goes out throughout your life that leads you to the place of financial freedom. And that's honestly, you know, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, you find that financial freedom or the freedom from fear is right up there at the top. People do not want to be uncertain. They don't want to be afraid. And as my great mentor, Jean-Marie Aviard, the great fund manager, he always said, and I've read this and heard him say it so many times, the future is uncertain. And so as many interruptions as you can avoid and avoid as much uncertainty as possible, you're going to be. So this comes in the form of education on risk management. It comes in the form of education on insurance. It comes on the education of budgeting, what's necessary, what's not necessary. Every bit of your life revolves around having a job, making money, and planning for your family, and having career, and there's a lot that needs to be addressed.
And we're talking predominantly about the investment side of things, and they're kind of looking towards a retirement goal, but we're also, you know, you need to think of this as when you purchase a car, what you need to know. If you are buying a home, if you are wanting to make a financial gift to someone in your retirement plan, I mean, all of these things, all of these pieces make up your individual financial philosophy.
As an example, this morning, Jim, a wonderful client in her late 70s came in to see me. I was working on the accounts, getting ready to talk about recommendations, all this. She was there for about 35 minutes. We spent about 90 seconds talking about the accounts and the rest of the time talking about a condo she's looking at buying. Because it is the number one thing on her mind financially. It's not how the markets are doing today, but that's a part of financial literacy. If I do this what does this mean? What are the impacts and what are the outcomes going to be? That's part of the continual process of financial planning.
And with all of this too, we reiterate, you know, connecting with an attorney to do your estate plan, your will, your trust, whatever you need to do. Working with a CPA, even if you do your own taxes, every couple of years, it's not a bad idea to get a second opinion. You may be missing out on something that your tax program that you bought for $29.99 didn't pick up.
Exactly.
So I say all of that in that you need to communicate your financial plan, not just with a financial advisor, not just with a banker, but everybody who is involved and that you are utilizing as a resource for your entire financial picture.
Absolutely. Jim, when we come back, I'm going to talk about some books, and then we're going to take another break, and we're going to spend 30 seconds telling us about the show that you have prepared for the following week.
All righty.
This is Your Money with David Hayes.
So welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. We were doing some reminiscing and some joking at the beginning of the program, and Doug, just before we came out of the last segment, was talking about being a voracious reader and all the books he had, and I just had this image in my mind, but also a potential event that we should do for our clients. I could see Doug being the first in line in second grade when school had the book fair.
Oh,
you know, where they would roll the carts in and they'd have the posters with like the kitten and the rainbow or the dog and the spaceship or whatever. But every book, and you had the cheap paper and markdown. I want this book, this book, this book. And
highlight of my year. Everyone else wanted to play football and kickball. And remember, climb the rope up to the ceiling. Not me, man. I was ready for book club. Fudge, Super Fudge, Where the Red Fern Grows, Aesop's Fable, Frog and Toad.
Well, those are not financial books, and we're running short, so tell us about your financial literacy books of choice.
Here's some books. I don't even know how much time we have left, Jim. David Bach, who was a financial advisor for many years, wrote a series called The Smart Finish. Finish smart. So smart couples finish rich. I used to teach that program to young married couples. Smart women finish rich, which is about women who are single or widowed or doing finances on their own. Smart women finish rich. Then there was smart couples finish rich, which was all about a married couple who has got their financial houses in order. I would tell you, these are older books. Some of it feels a bit dated, but the principles are in those books. Excellent. Another book that he wrote that I recommend that everyone would read is called The Automatic Millionaire. And it's just simply about systematic saving over long periods of time, earning reasonable rates of return, and you become a millionaire 20, 30, 40 years later. So it's almost a fail-proof, you can't say that on the air, but it's a way to reduce risk and to accumulate wealth. So the Finish Well or the Finish Smart series and The Automatic Millionaire. Dave Ramsey, if we have people out here listening who are dealing with debt, this man can sometimes be polarizing. People can agree or disagree, but at the end of the day, if you have debts and you need to learn a simple way to go through a debt snowball or a debt avalanche and get debts under control, his financial piece is the first one. I think there's one called The Total Money Makeover, which is another good one. He actually has another good one about entree leadership, which is for business owners. I think that those books for people who are dealing with debt are excellent. I mentioned earlier, there's a young man I'm planning to, hoping to mentor. And it's a book that I read every December called The Richest Man in Babylon. I'm going to get him a copy of this. It's called The Richest Man in Babylon. It's a historic setting. It was written in 1926, so before the Great Depression. And all of the principles that he lays out in these chapters were written before the Great Depression, which is fascinating because they're the same things that everyone would tell you if you came and sat down with them today. The first is get your purse to fattening, save 10% of your income, right? Mm-hmm. Make sure you're getting advice from good people. It just really, really good, very historic setting reading, but very valuable. Lastly, Morgan Housel, who is kind of today's author over finances. He has terrific podcasts. If you get a chance, they're never more than 10 to 14 minutes. Morgan Housel is his name, but he wrote a book called The Psychology of Money, which was the best financial book I read in 2000. I think it was 20 or 21 that it came out. That particular book is an excellent read for people who are 30 years and older who understand that they have a certain wiring about them when it comes to money. It's not just, here's how to be a millionaire. He actually, the very beginning of it, talks about a man who was a janitor and a mechanic, and I think maybe even a bus driver, who left $8 million to his city because he had the gift of frugality.
Oh my gosh.
And he bought stocks. And so, and it's a really interesting story, just that anyone can put this together and make this happen. But the psychology of money really gets into why you are the way you are financially. And I have that. I have that in the way that I conduct myself. I understand my psychology of money, but a lot of people don't really know why they are the way they are financially. They don't understand where that blueprint or where that psychology comes from. And so that particular book is a very, very good book. People 30 and older. If anyone out there wants academic books about investing and boring books and things like that, you can call the office and I'll give you all the ideas that I've got. Okay, Jim, we need to take a break. And when we come back, I am going to bring us back in.
Okay.
Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. Jim,
yes.
It was the 1990s, and there was a sitcom that was called A Show About Nothing. It's called Seinfeld.
Oh.
Excellent show, great run, been around, lived through the ages. Now, I bring that up just to say this. Next week's show...
is the show about nothing?
Is a show about nothing. But we know and have great confidence, David is going to be back in studio. He's going to be bringing his A game, coming from this due diligence meeting. I may even call in from New York, depending on what's going on. Who knows? But we're going to have a good time next week on the show. So I'm just propping you up that if it ends up being a show about nothing, it's not your fault.
Ladies and gentlemen, help me. I wish I could come up with a pun for this today, but it's not going to happen. But that's all right. That's all right.
Well, the show must go on.
So if you missed any part of the show, don't forget Saturday morning, 9 o'clock here on WGCL. And then after the broadcast Thursday night, it'll be up and available for you at WGCLradio.com, where you can always stream all of our local broadcasting here at WGCL. It's also Social Security Month. So just a quick plug, if you missed our show with Mary Beth Franklin, go back and catch that from a week or so ago at WGCLradio.com. A lot of really good info on the Social Security world. She got into some in-depth stuff that just will benefit a lot of people.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening, everyone. Remember, financial literacy is a continuum. It doesn't stop. It continues on for the rest of your life.
Everybody have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.